Blog Talk Radio.
And will I wonder why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. Michael and I will share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma.
Oh,
Michael
you.
Is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael, or myself, or forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, your co-hosts, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
Hi, and welcome to the show. Today is Friday, December the 2nd, 2016. And our call-in number, and hopefully some of you, if you used the old number, you were still able to get through. I was as of yesterday. But our new number is 563-999-3581. That's 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Welcome, everyone. We're honored and delighted that you're here to share this space with us once again as we enter this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness and coming to comprehend the energy dynamics of the world in, through, and around us, and what our relationship is with those energetic dynamics, how the whole energy system works, and in particular, how to remove from our structures the things that really don't work. If you're going to live a human life, and you know, people want to oftentimes put it in terms of good and evil, well, we're going to drop the good and evil terms because there's been so much insanity done around that. We're just going to talk in terms of what supports human life, what doesn't. And, of course, to determine what supports human life, you have to make a determination as to what a human life is. And our best definition, there are not enough words in any language on the planet to describe that awesome thing called human life. But if you hold a newborn child, you'll get an experience of it. So what supports the expression and the experience of ourselves and those around us as this awesome active presence of love, and what degrades or destroys it? What integrates and what disintegrates human life? And the most basic conclusion that I would offer is that anything based in any form of hostility or fear will destroy human life. It will destroy the active presence of love, or at least destroy the awareness of it. You can't destroy the thing itself. You'll always have a human life. Your human life will always be available to you anytime you choose to uncover it and bring it into full free expression, and you get to experience yourself as the presence of love. If hostility or fear is an identification you've fallen into, then the forgiveness of those dynamics is what restores us to the truth of who we are. If you have not yet engaged in the forgiveness process, we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and in the upper left corner, first words on the page say start here. Click the start here button, and that'll walk you into and through everything you need to know about how to do forgiveness. And I'll just caution you that when you first see it, you'll go, this is ridiculous. It's totally backward. How could this possibly do anything for me? This is just a joke. Well, actually, the joke is on you. If you believe in a world based in hostility or fear, then you believe the opposite of what is true. And so believing the opposite of what is true, the only way you're going to undo that BS, that belief system, is by engaging in a tool that's the opposite of what you think would work. And that's what forgiveness does. And of course, once you've gone through those links, and on those links you'll find, through those links you'll find chapter 24 of my book, a free download. It's all about the conversation of the how-to of forgiveness. The second link will take you to the worksheet, the wake-up sheet. First one on the list is the one we suggest you use. There are others in the list that you may peruse as you carry on with your work, and all of the worksheets related to all the different workshops that we did, the worksheets we developed are there under that second link. And the third link under the Start Here button is a series of our, what we consider to be our most important shows, and in particular, forgiveness process, where we've had people call into the show and say, how do I do this? Start with the first one on the list. The first MP3, and they're free downloads, on that list is a real, honest-to-God show of a woman who's a medical doctor who called in over an issue that she thought was about current events in her life. And it's one of the most powerful worksheets I've ever done with anyone. So they're actually, I think, now 16 or 17 hours, each one an hour of walking somebody through how to forgive. So if you want to know what that technology looks like, download the worksheet, sit with one of those hours, and start filling in the blanks. And you will have the most amazing experience. And, of course, if you run into questions as you do that, we certainly are here to answer those questions 5 days a week. And so we're delighted. And speaking of questions, I got a question on Facebook. And, you know, that's not something I've really thought of too much or talked about. But if you are shy and don't want to call in, you're welcome to private message me on Facebook. And if you want a link to my Facebook page, it's JM, actually as in Jeannie and Michael, _RYCE. JM _RYCE. And it's just private message me. So the question I got from someone asked us was this: how do you do a wake-up sheet on money issues? I did a mind shifter on it, and she calls the mind shifter that I usually give to people about money a laugh-out-loud funny phrase, and that is, I always make twice as much as I can spend. So she did that mind shifter, and if you're not familiar with the mind shifter process, let's say for someone who has an issue with money, we would say, take a piece of paper, divide the page in half, and on the left-hand side of the page, write this thought down: always earn twice as much as I can spend. Now, on the right-hand side of the page, write whatever your mind says about it. Your mind usually says things like, BS, who are you kidding? That's a ridiculous idea. I've never been able to pay my bills. You're crazy. Okay, now write the mind shifter again. Once you run out of things, I always earn twice as much as I can spend. And just let yourself sit for a period of 2 hours where your phone's off. You're in a totally isolated space where you can stay focused on this this mind shifter. And what happens is, because the mind works through resonance, you will uncover things you didn't know about yourself in regard to whatever the issue is that you're working on. So through resonance, when I write, I always earn twice as much as I can spend, everything in my mind based in money starts to move in response to the resonance of that particular frequency or that particular thought. And so the question then is, what do I do with the information that I get when I write the mind shifter, when I start seeing those reactions? So spend 2 hours, write the mind shifter, see what comes up for you. And then let it be for a little bit. Go back and review it. And what you'll often find is you will go back and you'll see things on that piece of paper that you didn't know you wrote. You didn't know you'd thought those things. What happens is the unconscious mind starts to open up, and it starts to dump what never belonged. So when you go back, you start looking at, and of course we have a whole variety of tools besides the forgiveness process. You know, let's say for instance, you know, someone does that mind shifter, I always earn twice as much as I can spend, and I go back and I remember being about 10 years of age, and I you know, did a job for somebody, and you know, I didn't know exactly what I was doing, and I didn't do it right, and they came out and they blasted me and told me how I wasn't worth anything. So that would be a circumstance where the forgiveness process would be appropriate, to step into forgiveness in regard to that situation, the wake-up sheet. I might use responsibility communication. I might sit down and, you know, maybe the person who told me that at the age of 10 is dead and gone, but I had so much rage at them. It might be me sitting down and taking responsibility for my rage. I was 10. I didn't know what was going on. And I might get my breakthrough from writing them a responsibility communication, even though I never deliver it. Or it might have been something that happened 2 years ago, and I can go back and, you know, I can send this letter and sit face-to-face with this person and do responsibility communication. It might mean that I dig out the commitment to them. You know, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. It might be that I take the tool of using the commitment to myself. I promise to trust myself enough to tell myself the truth and be able to. So I might use any number of tools. I might use the codependent worksheet and look at my advice to them and then see how I can follow my own advice. So the answer to this question, as with virtually every question that's ever asked on the show, is always all of the above. Every tool we teach is about how to clean up those parts of our minds that are lost in hostility or fear, and how to get back to being able to keep love present in our minds, keep our human lives awake and aware in the presence of whatever the trauma is. And so each and every one of the tools, if you went back and listened to the archives of this show, I think we're up over something like 1,500 shows. If you went back and listened to 1,500 hours of shows, you wouldn't hear me say one word that didn't address this question. How do I deal with this? And it's all of the above. It's every tool we've got. So that would be my feedback. And if you're out there listening and you have some other questions come up, you're certainly welcome to message them to me on Facebook and or pick up the show, call our call-in number, which I don't have memorized now. Jeannie, you got the call number handy?
I do. It is 563-999-3581.
Cool. So that's our new call-in number. So if you're out there and that was your question, and that leads to more questions, which it often does, or you need some support in processing it, great. Then pick up the phone. Let's call. Let's talk about it. Otherwise, Dr. Tim, are you with us today, sir?
I am here.
Awesome. How do you be, and what's exciting in your world? Anything to share with us? Any patterns you're seeing in practice today, or anything the universe striking you as meaningful?
Well, I'll just say that the support group last night on Thursday, the first time since it began, that I, in my memory, in the last 2 years, we had just me at the support group. So I watched part of a healing through relationships, which is a nice review for me, and did a worksheet and got to go home an hour early. And we're sending loving thoughts to several members who routinely attend who were in different parts of the country, and one who was recovering from a long day of medical tests that revealed no cancer in his system, so he's thrilled with that. And
awesome.
And again, just talking about how even when there's only one or two people in the support group, it can be very intense and very useful. So the other thing is the pattern that's going so far today is people who think their only value comes from being able to help other people or do things for other people. And the crippling conflict that develops, because it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. What these people end up with is an internal crisis where what they've preached and what they've lived in their life is they've been telling people it's okay, you need to be able to let me help you, I'm here to help you, that's how I get value. And then as soon as the tables are flipped, they go into a personal crisis because they think their only value comes from helping others. And when they have to step back and receive help, it makes them so stuck because they've defined their worth in terms of the opposite. So they're in conflict in their own belief system, and that's been the theme for today, oddly enough, that helping people breathe into the realization that the pain they're feeling and the way they're stuck is something that the only solution to it is for them to question and release their beliefs about this fundamental process inside themselves. So does that stir up any brain cells?
Well, the first thought that comes is that, you know, oftentimes that comes from the place of, well, if I need help, then I'm weak, or I'm helpless, or there's something wrong with me, or I'm broken. And so a good mind shifter in a situation like that would be, it's safe and healing for me to be weak, helpless, and broken. And write that and watch what comes out of those files in the mind, and that will tend to help someone get back to a balance where I can be there to support somebody, I can receive support. It's a two-way street. You know, it would be a pretty pretty traumatic world if everybody who wanted to give and offer support, each time they did that, the people they were offering to refuse, oh, no, I can't receive that. So it's definitely got to be a balance to it. So that might be a good mind shifter for someone to use in that arena.
Yeah, that would stir up plenty for the people I was working with earlier today. Listen, needy.
Yes. And to ask, and to be able to ask for help. You know, to be able to ask for help.
Well, that
would
my
be useful.
Bless their hearts.
We'll hold the space for that blessing for sure. And in the safety and the balance of both giving and receiving support, it's a. There have been a few times in intensives. I'm thinking about a time in particular when I was doing an intensive at Heartland, and a woman showed up that had driven in a little rickety car that didn't look like it would make it across town from Colorado. And how she found Heartland, I'll never understand. But she was obviously very mentally distraught, and brought her into my house and sat down, you know, gave her a glass of water and said, you know, just catch up with yourself a little bit. She was pretty disheveled. And I had a phone call to make and said, I need to take care of this and I'll be right back. And by the time I came back, she was back in the car and gone, driven all the way from Colorado. And that just stirred huge, huge grief in me. And I was the one laying on the floor and everybody was supporting and breathing me. So it's definitely a two-way street. And when something comes up, it's awesome to be able to ask for that support and then receive it for sure.
Agreed.
So let's check in with Jeannie and see if there's anything happening in the chat room or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up. We've got visitors here. We just had Michael and Margaret arrive to pay us a visit for the day before we head on to Fruitland Park. If anybody's in the Florida area and around Orlando, Ocala, in that neighborhood, we're going to be starting a week of workshops on Sunday morning. We'll do their Sunday service at Fruitland Park Unity, and then we'll do Why Is This Happening to Me Again Sunday afternoon, free open workshop, Monday through Friday, each evening, 7 to 9:30. And then on Saturday, we'll do an all-day Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. So if anybody wants to join us, Sunday through Friday are free open workshops. Saturday is the one workshop we charge a fee for, but it's pretty heavy-duty processing happens, and it's pretty awesome stuff. So if anybody wants to join us, come and do that. Otherwise, we'll look forward to maybe seeing you at the intensives in March and April in Oak Island on the beach or at Heartland this summer. So, Jeannie, anything happening in the chat room or anybody with a hand up?
Well, the mind shifter that you just were giving, it is safe and healing for me to be helpless, needy, and broken. Someone in the chat room said that was for them. They were going to work on that one tonight. So, and we
cool.
do have two hands up. So the first one has been on there before you and I were even on there. So I think it might be Doug. Area code 314, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, Doug, how are you, sir? How are things in St. Louis?
Well, I'm in Minnesota.
Are you in St. Louis?
I'm in Minnesota right now.
Ah, okay. So you decided you need a taste of real winter.
Yeah, decided to come up here for Thanksgiving, and then I stayed a little longer.
I understand that.
Yeah. Good incentive here for that. But I decided to call. I mean, I almost called you a few days ago, but there's plenty of things I could talk to you about. But the one I'm present is that I got a really, what seemed to me initially to be a really nice phone call from my mother saying, well, what do you want for Christmas? And then she went on to suggest that probably a good thing would be something to help out with my room, which she said is such a disaster. And it really triggered Diane when I told her about it. And then she did the worksheet and we were talking and offered up some very interesting insight that it's like she hears my mom trying to control me, not accepting me, thinking my room isn't okay. And when I invited her up there at a recent visit that she made a month ago or so, she was just like, couldn't handle my ballet posters at all. She thought those were awful. And it's because it triggers, you know, stuff in her. I mean, this guy holding a woman right up against him and, you know, so on and so forth. So I have a lot going on around my family with my sister, her feeling that Diane and I are not a good example and trying to keep Diane away from my nieces. And that always creates a problem around Christmas because I want to be in both places or I want to be with my whole family. And she feels like I'm a bad example to her children and because we don't have a three-way limited contract and other things like that. So there's just a lot in there, and especially around, it was insightful to me that, yeah, I guess in a way that is an invalidation, and it's part of the real problem that my mom is having with her, with the two nieces too. They are treating her very badly, and I try to bring this work into the family, and my sister's very afraid of it, doesn't agree with it because it's not enough. She thinks you're off the mark and that you don't have enough of, pray to Jesus and he'll save you. And that's the end of the story. And I just, it's real. I don't know whatever you might, I'm just curious what you might have to say about it or what input you might have, particularly around, it was quite a realization for me to think, yeah, that is in a way a control. You know, I wasn't seeing it that way initially in that phone call, but I said a lot coming out here.
Well, you know, you take me back first. First thing that triggers is Yeshua explaining the pharisaical mind. And, you know, there's this example where Yeshua is invited to this Pharisee's house for dinner. And, of course, a Pharisee in this context is not a Jewish religious figure. A Pharisee is a particular quality and function, the way the mind functions. And, you know, if you remember the story, he goes in and sits down for dinner and he doesn't wash his hands. So he's getting disapproval, as you know, just the whole issue you're talking about, and the need to control from the Pharisee. And he defines the pharisaical mind and he says, you keep the outside of the cup and the platter perfect. You keep it clean and neat and orderly. Everything's got to be just so. But your inward parts are filled with hostility and fear. The Greeks actually translate the words as ravening and wickedness, but it's basically just hostility and fear. So,
yeah.
You know, when one lives in blockage of truth, they believe something that isn't true, and truth shows up, goes up. And so, if somebody's got a hair trigger that they can be in a rage in a minute's notice or in 10 minutes walk away screaming in rage, they're probably in blockage of truth and think that by controlling the outer environment, then nothing will get close enough. If you remember from the codependence to interdependence workshop, we talk about the pseudo-solutions of the non-being mind. And one of them is, if I could just control everybody and everything, nobody get close enough to this pain, and then I'd never have to deal with it. Well, of course, that's the biggest lie the mind has ever told, because if there's something out of harmony in you that doesn't belong in you, that energy is literally creating physical pain, physical degeneration, physical disease, suffering, and ultimately death. But one thinks if they can control the outside so that it doesn't get close enough to the inward trauma, and you know that instant where the hostile remark can come out, and then there's the denial that it was even hostile, no, it's all about you. When one plays in that arena, they think if they could just control everything that they wouldn't have to look. So one of the things you might want to look at is, and I'd offer that feedback to Diane as well, and I can only imagine that, you know, from what I know of you guys and be around you guys too, are some of the most powerful, sweetest influences I've ever seen around the kid. Man, give me you guys compared to the average bear any day. But you might want to do some work around your goals for them and what you want from them. You know, what do I want from mom? I want approval. And then you might even want to do a worksheet and breathe into mom's space and do some worksheets on you as though you were your mom. Diane, you might do the same. You might find that with some parental influence of control and maybe some parasitical dynamics in your family system. So you might, both of you go into your mom's space. Just imagine that you're your mom and you're looking at Doug's room and you see this picture that to you, and it sounds like it's got some sexual overtones for her. It isn't about dance. It's about, puritanical sexual mores. And so you might do a worksheet as though you were your mom around that. And perhaps a worksheet around mom needing to control Doug and unwillingness to look at what Doug's bringing up in her. Mm-hmm. So you might find each of those things would be useful. And then, of course, around your sister, it sounds like the same thing, is that because you guys don't have a marriage, as the culture provides rules for, that there's some sort of disapproval. And you might do the same thing with your sister. Is, one might be around wanting her to approve of you, wanting relationship with your nieces and nephews, whatever. It sounds like there's a really fertile field to look at a lot of old family dynamics. And of course, when you stop and think that perhaps you're the first in your family to really look on an inside level, to go into the parasitical mind of the family and comprehend that it could be cleaned up, you might be the first one in who knows how many generations it has been willing or even conceived of it being possible. Because most people are so settled on external rituals, it's out there, it's something out there, as opposed to, Yeshua's on my team. He created the most awesome tools going, and if I do it in his name, if I follow the pattern that he set, then healing will occur. And so perhaps, doing some work around the ritualized aspect of religion that makes it external, makes it about the external event. You know, it's interesting, the original meaning of people gathering on Sunday morning, actually it was originally Saturday, but the people gathering on Sunday, and it's become about, a Sunday service or what they call mass or what have you, but the original word is liturgy. And the word liturgy means our common work. People came together not to look good on Sunday morning, not to listen to a preacher rail on about, how bad they were or what have you, or how somebody was going to come and fix it for them, but rather who came into a space of support where they could look at what they were holding in their own pharisaical minds based in hostility and fear and literally tell the truth about it and start to work through it. And, you know, when you show up doing that, you provide a space that few people have ever conceived of as possible. And when that space is safe enough, then those things start to open. And when people have those kind of unconscious dynamics that they haven't dealt with, they don't know which way to turn, because the energy that's moving in them is so deep and so painful and so powerful, they just go blotto unconscious and they default back to whatever their power person did. So, you know, there's a combination of things to look at there. Does that fit, make sense? Stimulate any more questions or thoughts?
Makes sense a lot, a lot. It's excellent. And the question that comes to my mind is, how obviously, where is my parasitical mind at? You know, how is it that I am guilty
You've never reached out and tried to control anybody in any way, shape, or form, your daughter or anything like that, have you?
No.
No. Oh, okay. Okay, well, then we can forget that idea.
Mm-hmm.
But you might look there and see if there's any kind of repeating pattern. If only son would do what I want him to do, then everything would be okay. Then you might, under stress, find yourself thinking, if my daughter would only do what I wanted to, then everything would be okay. And that's the same dynamic.
Yeah, it's definitely alive there. And that was one of the things I was going to call in about before, is just because I, doing process around it, realized so much that my wishes for things to have been different there are, I need to really be looking at what, I'm going blotto, not, no, how I, how did I bring this into my life? You know, how did I attract someone resisting instead of being focused on why were they resisting? Why did they want something different? Why were they not okay with, but it's like, what part of my mind brought that to me? And I did want to ask you about that. I mean, are we, when abuse shows up or when anything negative, not saying that necessarily that was that, I mean, certainly in her mind it wasn't, it was just her wanting what she wanted and the way she wanted it. And, but when something shows up, if I'm saying I'm responsible for everything I feel, see, hear, and attract in my life, if someone comes to my door and breaks into my house or whatever it is, whatever abuse shows up, the real negative stuff, there is a totally appropriate space, is there not, to be looking at, well, what is in me that brought this to my door?
Absolutely. And, of course, you just have to ask yourself the question, how many generations do you suppose these dynamics have been going on in your family system? You know, think back to when you were smaller and you listened to uncles and aunts, or, you know, what kind of conversations occurred, what was happening in the family system, and did you see any evidence of that sort of thing? And chances are you came into a family system, pretty honestly, that, you know, where you inherited what the family system hadn't worked through yet.
Right, and we're still working on it. Okay, well, some really good material there for me to work with.
One of the, you know, one of the questions, you know, one of the things that the non-being mind will often try to do, and it's another one of the pseudo-solutions of the non-being mind, is if I could just figure this out. If I could understand, if I could just figure this out, then everything would be okay. And the truth is, when you've got 1,000 generations going on inside of you, there's no figuring it out. What you can do is step in and forgive it, collapse the current painful construct in the mind and come into relationship with what's underneath it. And as you do that, you'll be cleaning up the family dynamics. You'll be cleaning up the non-being mind, not just for yourself, but from your whole generational bloodline. And it's a powerful piece of work. And when you open that veil, you know, Yeshua talks about the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. He was not talking about a purple curtain in a church. The veil he's talking about is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious. That's the veil that must open. And when that opens, the dynamics of 1,000 generations start to move. And you've opened that, you've invited that, and it's going to move.
Yay. Well, it's great. We're going to do some breathing this afternoon. So now this is lots more to
awesome. Nothing engage. Like getting things stirred up and doing still point. Nothing like it.
May I offer?
So, Diane, I hear you laughing in the background. How are you, young lady?
Yes, I'm doing well. Glad to have Doug here for a while. Yeah.
Cool.
What his mother triggered in me, it was just so, you know, after a certain point, it's like, it doesn't matter what the trigger is or what's going on with her. It's just, it's like, well, this is what needed to come up today. You know, it could have come from anywhere, but it was under the surface ready to pop. So, yeah, I got in touch with a lot. You know, obviously we have the same stuff in our generations about control. And the effects of that. Yeah, it's been really good.
Cool. One of the things that you can do, though, when you want to ask this question of what did I do to draw this or to produce this result, is look at your response to it. When you look at your response to it, your response came before the event happened. The response came because it was in you. The thing that draws the event to us is the fact that the response we're going to have to the event is in us resonating somebody to come forward and bring it up in us because it is a dis-ease energy. It's one that doesn't belong in us. So, you know, it's kind of like the Creator set the system up so that it reflects the fact that the Creator abhors us being diseased.
Mm-hmm.
The Creator wants us well, healthy, and whole. And so the genius of having it set up through resonance so that everything that you hold that is disease energy that doesn't belong in you, everything that's of the parasitical mind is an energy that's continuously, literally moving, and everything that moves sets up an energy field. And whatever sets up an energy field draws the likeness of it to itself. And so when somebody shows up to do it and I go, that's what I did to draw that. And that came first.
That last sentence again, Michael, that's when I get to...
That's when I get to deal with what I've been hiding from myself.
What I get to deal with. Okay, deal with. Thank you.
And what you said is gorgeous because I've heard you say those things before, but it's reaching me at a deeper level. It's like, well, what can I do to stop bringing this crap into my life? It's like, no, this is coming into my life because I need to heal it. Yay!
Yeah, there's only one thing to do, and that's forgive what you
engage in the
first place.
Wow.
The real question that the non-being mind asks in that circumstance is how can I change them so I don't have to look at this? And that's
absolutely
the basis of all of the control game. And if you find yourself in some form of hostile or fearful response when somebody says or does something, then recognize that they're doing that to show you your hostile, fearful response and give you the opportunity to heal it. Now, you can go kicking and screaming and block the truth, hating the truth and blaming everybody else and thinking all you have to do is change them or fix them, or you can stop and take a breath and gently move into those parts of yourself, let them soften, love truth enough to be able to receive feedback from the world, trust the world rather than blaming it, and watch the process accelerate. And you know, there's a point where with enough willingness, you get to what I call process point. And process point is where that veil is open 24/7. And those underlying unconscious energies are moving consciously, continuously, because there's a powerful enough presence of love in you to dissolve those energies as they move. It's a precious, precious place to be. I've labeled it because I've seen it happen, but I've only maybe seen it happen in a half a dozen different people over the years. And it's precious, precious time. Enough willingness and you go there. no willingness, and it's like everything becomes an insult. Every, you know, you turn around to that person next to you, to that person across the country, across the globe, and it's always, the bottom line is always, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you that I'm feeling this? Well, excuse me, you're feeling it because it's in you. When do you love truth enough to go, I'm having this response because I'm having this response. This is mine. It's in me. It's about me. And I need to forgive this. Rather than, let's see, how can I manipulate them, fix them, change them, so that I don't have to feel this way? Now, that doesn't mean that you can't ever ask for a change. It doesn't mean that you can't say, you know, it really worked better for me if you do this instead of that. That's perfectly appropriate if done in a connected space of love. But if it's out of that hostile place, then there's the next piece of work. And, you know, we started out talking about mind shifters, and life is like a mind shifter. And it's going to bring up, it's custom designed to bring up everything that needs to be healed, because life wants you alive, not dying from hidden unconscious dynamics. Go ahead.
I just said I love the idea that life wants me alive, and I do want to hear from Dr. Tim.
Yeah. I'll see what Dr. Tim has to share. Tim, you have any thoughts for Doug and Diane?
Well, the brain cells that got resonated for me, and this happens on a regular basis in our group, people start talking about, I want to figure out what I'm doing to bring this stuff in my life. And we've been here before, we've talked about it, and what I had to say was very much what you ended up moving towards, Michael, that what I direct people to is, don't worry about trying to figure out what you did to bring this in your life. Figure out what you're feeling in this moment that's less than love, and use all the tools to dismantle it. And what, you know, we had Julie Haverstick on the call a while back, and it was just Julie and Michelle and I, and Julie said it's been her experience that every time she's holding a goal for anybody else, she realizes with her work that she's already violated that goal or is actively violating that goal. So if I think I'm upset because somebody doesn't want me around the holidays, and that's going to keep me away from somebody that I want to be around the holidays, my job is to do the goal canceling, to find the space of love within me, keep my conscious awareness focused on that, and extend that to everyone and everything in every situation, including those people who, from their fear and pain, might be taking steps to keep me away from what I want or what I think is good or what I think would benefit my nieces and nephews, etc. And when I do that work, there's so much less need for that let me figure it out trap, because I've actually focused my conscious awareness on my true nature, and I'm feeling the experience of love in the moment, and that transforms my experience of life. So that was my input.
Thank you.
Good one, Tim. Right on track. The next thing that you might want to do in each of these situations with your mom, with your sister, with your relationship issues around them, is step into some responsibility communication. It can be often helpful to do it in writing. You know, if you go to the Start Here button on whyagain.org, and the second link is worksheets, go down the list, and in there you'll see a responsibility communication letter. And it's one that a gentleman named David wrote to his dad around alcohol in the house. It's a couple of pages long. But he is someone that came to an intensive back almost 20 years ago now, and really dug in. He had just come out of a detox program with AA, and he was really digging and doing his work, and a big blow-up happened around his dad. And so he sat down and really spent time. He actually sent it to me and asked for feedback before he sent it to his dad, around his dad using alcohol and, you know, the family dynamics with alcohol. It's a really powerful letter, and my thought would be that perhaps Doug in particular, that you might sit with, this might be more applicable with your sister than with your mom, you know, but to have that conversation about what she perceives as the short form Jesus. All you have to do is say magic words and everything's going to heal, which if you look at people saying those magic words, it's pretty clear it's not true. And then, you know, that there's a long form Jesus and that he's given us a formula. And you might point out in that communication letter that, you know, the words, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody comes to the Father except through me, is an idiom, perhaps explain an idiom, and that what those words really mean in the first century Aramaic is, I've given you a pathway to do this. Follow me. Come with me. I will show you. There's nobody else around that's doing this, so I am the way, and the man is teaching the one. And perhaps you can get her to hear that, as opposed to, it sounds like perhaps because of you're not falling in line with some of her beliefs, that she's felt like you've rejected what he has to offer, that perhaps communicating that you've embraced it on a much deeper level than what you had previously when you were in the, you know, the short form Jesus, that you've embraced on a much deeper level, and perhaps some responsibility communication around that and making it all about you and yours. And, you know, download that, print off that communication letter, and it's a really powerful example. Might help to open a space with your sister to see that and to hear that.
Certainly open to considering it, and of course the first thing that comes up is my terror around that. I've tried to approach her, tried to have conversations in the past, and you know, the conversation you and I had when you were out in Eureka about grace, and it's like I see both exist. I mean, I recognize we need to do our work, and there is ultimately, it's all done by Rukka. It's all done by the grace. It's all done by what Jesus.
Yes.
You know, it's just.
Here's
how you
do it.
Pardon?
But isn't it? I say yes, and that's how you do it. Absolutely. But isn't it interesting that here you sit as a relative and cherished one of your sister, and the words you use to describe your interaction with her, from your perspective, the word you use is terror. I mean, over Yeshua, the one who says, love those who hate you, do good to those who despitefully use you, that it's terror to open that level of communication. And I'd be doing some worksheets around that terror. And, you know, I've worked with a number of people over the years who feel like either in their genetic history or their own lives, they've worked on these issues over and over and over, that they've come back lifetime after lifetime, or that it's revisited them down through the generations, however you understand that energy transfer. And many people, like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if we've got time or we might have. If Julie happens to be out there, Julie Haverstick, perhaps she'd push one and jump on the line and share. And I'll start to share. And if she puts her hand up, Jeannie, maybe you could just jump in. But this goes back about maybe 8 or 10 years ago. And Julie's been doing, literally been doing a minimum of 5, and some days I've seen her do 30 worksheets a day for 27, 28 years. And when she'd come to teacher training, or I'd ask her to present in the classroom, she would get up in front of the classroom and just go blank. I mean, she literally would just, you know, she'd have a lesson plan, she'd have it all written down in front of her, and she'd just go blotto, unconscious. And about 8 or 9 years ago, she called me one morning. She's like, I'm in excruciating chest pain. I need help. And so we went to work with that, and what came forward was that she had been, or is it her family system, generations had passed down, that she had been speaking truth in South Africa in the apartheid movement, and that someone had literally speared her through the chest. And once she got in touch with that memory, she realized that there was this exact spot on her back that tied in with this pain in her lungs and her chest that ever since she was a kid was always a problem. It was always like just something going on there. And it took her a pretty significant time period to overcome that pain and to get back to the point where she could breathe. But she literally, you know, I mean, I had her close her eyes, and she literally was able to see this woman. She actually saw her from a profile, and then she spoke to her, and she asked, "Am I you?" And the woman literally turned face on to her, this black woman, and face on and said, "Yes, I am you." And she was able to breathe and touch into that, and that she was speaking truth, and someone had literally speared her through the heart. I mean, a spear that went right through her. Now, you'd say, well, that's a fantasy. Don't believe in past lives. Well, you don't need to believe in past lives. It could be just a general thing, but a generational issue. But whatever the dynamic is, and I've seen this repeatedly with people around this particular issue, speaking truth and being damaged for it. We had a teacher's training later that summer. It took her a couple of weeks to work through the physical pain of this. She got up for teacher training, and she did such a crackerjack presentation. It was just awesome. Not one hesitation, not one word lost, not one train of thought lost, just like she'd been doing it all her life. And I'm saying that, you know, for years, every time she'd get up to teach, she would just go blank until that event was dealt with. And once she dealt with it, she just stood up there and taught like it was just as natural could be. Now, my take, my interpretation, that would be that she carried an issue genetically or otherwise where she had been damaged for speaking truth and so had terror about speaking truth, literally had been killed over it. And once she was able to forgive that energy, she could speak it with no problem. I mean, and since then, I mean, every year she comes up with, when we do teacher training, she comes up with a more creative presentation, a fun presentation. You know, she was a kindergarten teacher, never had the problem with the little kids. It was just standing in front of adults. But she brings props in, and she does just all kinds of stuff, you know, some, like Jeannie does, with all kinds of neat stuff that just opens the space for people. So the fact that with your sister, and I assume your sister isn't, you know, 6'4" and has beat your head in several times to a pulp. You're not a small guy, so I assume that, you know, that's not where your terror comes from. So really, looking at embracing and looking at your terror and your terror around speaking truth might be a major healing.
Okay. I think a part of that is to my past attempts, how badly they've gone and how it results in her becoming angry or cutting me off further from her family and herself.
So my question would be, has it gone badly because she becomes angry? Or is she getting a chance to look at her anger? And are you getting a chance to be the space that supports her healing her anger around truth and around the teachings of Yeshua? Because certainly, if she were actually engaged in Yeshua, the fact that you're her brother, she would be holding and connected to a space of love with you. If, in fact, what she was saying was that, you know, those magic words fix everything, she'd be fixed and she'd simply be in love with you. And if that's not what's happening, then you're certainly, it sounds like, opening an opportunity for her to learn forgiveness. And so maybe that could be part of your communication with her and just get courageous enough to go, you know, like, I'm going to go for this. Sweetie, if you want to go into the most intense, outrageous, traumatic rage that ever happened in the world, I'm going to simply hold the space for it. Because if that's in you, I cherish you enough to hold the space for you to go through it and get rid of it. I mean, you're opening a big opportunity for her to learn forgiveness when you open this communication. And if you're cut off from your nieces, nephews, then really, you know, once you're cut off, you're cut off. You can't get worse. But perhaps a gentle opening of a depth of understanding in a way that's responsible and creates a space for her. I mean, it sounds like a lot of pretty heavy-duty energy if over, you know, a conversation about Jesus, she has to go that berserk. I mean, ooh, how much suffering is going on inside of her to get to that stage? I mean, where does she get the capacity in the name of this gentle being who said, love those who hate you, do good to those who despitefully you, be the presence of love, and that, what kind of trauma is she carrying? That's like heavy-duty stuff. So I certainly join you in holding the space for her and be able to open that and let go of it and get free of that kind of rage and pain. That's pretty heavy duty.
Well, I'm
go ahead.
I do want to hear your and, but I just want to say I would like to ask for everybody on the call support with that, because I feel there is huge pain there. There's no question. And
she doesn't have a clue how to approach it and deal anything with it.
No, it's not possible for her to do that. No, it seems.
Yeah.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
So
I'm
that's,
certainly
you know,
holding a space for it. Yeah. I mean, imagine being able to have a conversation with your sister who actually believes what Yeshua said. And actually, her default setting is to go to love, because her relationship is with love, and her relationship is with the Creator, and what she worships, and worship means emulates. What she emulates is the presence of love. Imagine that you could actually open the space for her to get to that, and what kind of things could open.
That would be so amazing and awesome. Amazing and awesome.
I mean, what a gift, what a pathway, and what a gift to give your sister, and to be willing to put your head on the chopping block for that. And, I mean, I assume she's not going to come up and punch you in the nose, so what do you got to lose? Except that you have goals for her approval that aren't being met, and there is what resonates your pain. And my and was going to be, and this may tie into some of the stuff that's going on with Mom, in her need to control you in order that you don't get too close to her pain. So you may just open it for both of them.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah. Delighted.
Fabulous.
Here to hold the space.
Thank everybody for their love.
Yeah, you've got it. And Diane, it sounds like maybe some of that same family dynamic that may be part of your matching bags of garbage and your attraction to Doug, and that'll be another layer of that that'll clear up for you too. So how awesome is that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank everybody for their love and their support, and all for everyone who's in fear and pain and unable to so far release it, that it can be released. The whole planet has so much that it needs to be released. I do.
Yep.
Everyone. Happy to.
Well, I'm certainly here on the team to hold the space for it.
Thank you, Michael.
All right, delight. Well, we're down to our last few seconds, so I'm going to close the show out and thank you for the call. And if any more percolates up, let's carry the conversation on Monday. In the meantime, have a good weekend and the best year yet of your eternal life. Come join us in Fruitland Park, Florida, just outside of Orlando, if you're in this area. Tomorrow, or Sunday, pardon me. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, as we present the Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.